Watch Your Tongue Part 2, right? Last week was foul language, and today we're going to think about slander, gossip, evil speaking. You just sum all these things up as evil speaking against others. Our speech is easily one of the most difficult aspects of our life to control. Just in James chapter 3, he mentions several things there. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man. If you can get that under control, you got it all under control, right? And tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. No man can tame the tongue. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. There's that big section there talking about how hard it is to control what we say. You know, people love to talk about other people, you know, especially if they can say something bad. Bad news travels fast for a reason. Yeah, at work, over the fence with the neighbors, especially over the phone, internet, that kind of stuff. All kinds of media is specifically devoted to the latest gossip and public figures. I mean, TMZ makes big money doing what they do, right? You know, so dig up the dirt. People just seem to delight in digging up dirt on others. And if we're honest, most of us would have to admit that at times we have problems too. You know, I mean, how many of us can legitimately say that we've never said something about someone else that we later realize we should have never said, right? It's just this way it works. It's part of being human, right? But the more we understand the Bible and are diligent to apply it to our lives, you know, the better we'll do on this subject. And there's lots of types of speech that we're warned of in the Bible. Here's a kind of a rundown. Gossip is in the Bible. A rumor or talk of a personal, sensational, or intimate nature. So that's gossip. Rumors, unverified information of certain or uncertain origin, that kind of. Slander is a false statement, really, you know, made to injure somebody, you know, their reputation, that kind of stuff. To backbite is a very common word in the Bible. It means to speak spitefully and slanderously about a person. A talebearer, that's another common one, especially in the Old Testament, a person who spreads malicious stories or gossip. There's rail, you know, we won't talk much about rail tonight, you know, but that means to condemn, to attack, in bitter or harsh terms, be mean about it, you know. And to revile is to denounce with abusive language, you know. So there's all kinds of ways people can speak evilly. And so those are the types of things that we got to be, you know, putting out of our lives. But I really want to start tonight by thinking about what is not evil speaking. Okay, I think we need to get that out of the way. Understanding that is probably the most difficult part of this for some folks. You know, some folks believe that all talking about people who aren't present is sinful. I've run into that. Others think that it's only saying bad things about people who aren't present is sinful. Some think that only talking about things that you don't know to be true is sinful. So we need to think about this. We need to note, first of all, that while there are many ways to be guilty of speaking evil about someone, other people, not everything that some would call evil speaking is necessarily sinful or wrong. We need to let the Bible define what's wrong. And simply talking about someone who is not present is not necessarily sinful. You know, many inspired men in the Bible did this. You know, who would claim that they were wrong? In Matthew 28, the angel told the women to go tell the apostles about Jesus and him being resurrected. And so they're to speak to the apostles about someone who wasn't present. In Matthew 11, Jesus told the people how great John the Baptist was. You know, he's talking about John behind his back, right? Was Jesus gossiping? Well, no. Well, and so in Acts 11, Peter told all the Christians in Jerusalem about Cornelius and his household. He recounted those events. In all these cases, someone spoke about people who weren't present, but did they sin? Well, no. And we often do similar things, and we know it's not wrong, but we need to be reminded of this. Because sometimes people find out that you've been talking about them, and they're going to accuse you of evil speaking when not necessarily evil speaking, you know. So we need to keep that straight, you know. But we do this. I mean, we may tell good news about someone, you know. They had a baby, got a job, promotion, whatever, bought a new car, you know. We may tell interesting or funny stories about people when they're not present, you know. And of course, usually the person involved isn't going to object that we told that story, you know. We make announcements, right? We make announcements in our assemblies when we pray to God about people who aren't present, you know. Someone who's out of town, someone who's sick. Tonight, our shut-ins, right? You know, those are people who are not present. And, you know, is it wrong, you know, to talk about them, to make announcements about them and pray for them? Well, no, it's not. And so not all just talking about other people is necessarily evil speaking. But here's the thing, though. I want to add to this. Even telling unfavorable or uncomplimentary things about people not present, that's not necessarily sinful either. You know, again, lots of inspired men in the Bible did the same thing. We wouldn't say they were wrong. In Matthew 15, after Jesus finished rebuking the Pharisees, they're in private now with his disciples, the apostles, and the apostles say, "Hey, Jesus, you offended the Pharisees." And Jesus proceeded to talk bad about the Pharisees. He's warning them about the sins and the errors of the Pharisees. In Matthew 20, Jesus took his disciples, told them about the chief priests and scribes, how they would kill him. In Galatians 2, not one too long ago, we studied that. Paul wrote about a sin that Peter had committed in Antioch. You know, Bible writers often record events in which various people committed sins, right? Even naming names and different groups involved in that kind of stuff. You know, Diotrephes, Demetrius, those types of stuff. Did those inspired men sin by doing that? Well, no. But on top of that, there are situations where the Bible even commands us to tell people about bad things that other people did. We're commanded to do it. In Matthew 18, if your brother sins against you and you go to him and he won't listen, then you get some witnesses and he still won't listen, guess who's supposed to be told about his sin next? The whole church. Everybody's supposed to be told about it. And so under certain circumstances, we have to tell other people about a person's sin. You know? And also we're required to oppose error. We're required to oppose false teaching. And in doing so, we'll mention sins of people that they've committed or the false teaching that they've done in order to warn others. And sometimes when you do that, people will hear that you're talking about these other people and they'll claim that we're gossiping about those people. But the Bible examples show us that it's not necessarily sinful, and in many cases, God requires us to do it. So, just because we've spoken about someone who's not present, even occasionally having to say bad things about them, that does not necessarily mean we've sinned. And so with that in mind, let's now start thinking about what is evil speaking. Some examples from the Bible. Well, bottom line, it involves saying unfavorable things about a person in many ways. One is first to accuse others of doing wrong, when we don't know it to be true. Exodus 20:16, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. 2 Timothy 3:3, Paul lists a number of sins that characterize perilous times, and slander is in the list, right? So this is a person who, this is speech where we basically make something up. You know, we may have a hunch, whatever, but we don't know the facts, and so we spit it out there like it's truth anyhow. Now, on top of that, it's also evil speaking if we circulate a false report that someone else has started, no? People often circulate rumors, gossip, slander, that kind of stuff by saying, "I don't know if this is true, but I heard," right? Exodus 23:1, you shall not circulate a false report. And it goes on to say, do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. No matter how with whom the accusation originates with, we shouldn't repeat it. We shouldn't spread it unless we have, again, evidence that it's true. The fact that somebody simply made an accusation is not enough. Anybody can make an accusation, right? Now with that, you know, we also need to think, well, what if I strongly suspect something, you know, but I can't really prove it. We still don't have anything to talk about, you know. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 19, Paul told Timothy, don't accept as true any accusations against an elder unless you got at least two or three witnesses. Multiple people have to confirm this to be a true event, that kind of stuff. So if we don't have proof, we need to ask, you know, seek witnesses, find out the truth, but don't affirm guilt until there's proof. You know? Here's another way in 1 Timothy 6 of evil speaking here. It says, if anyone teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which accords with godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but is obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which come envy, strife, reviling, that's our word there, evil suspicions ties in with it, useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth. We suppose that godliness is a means of gain, from such withdraw yourself. Stay away from people like this, right? And so the sins listed here includes reviling, that means speaking evil of somebody, and evil suspicions. And so what this is jumping to conclusions, right? Without adequate proof, you know. Oftentimes when there's some kind of conflict, there's some kind of issue, some kind of strife between us, people will circulate all kinds of rumors, but they'll also even assign motives for why the person did it. You know, I heard he did this, and I think he did it because of. That's what we got there when we have revilings and evil suspicions, you know. If we don't have the facts, we got to investigate. Ask questions, gather testimony, that kind of stuff. But don't make charges until we have reasonable evidence. You know, otherwise, we're going to be guilty of evil speaking. You know? Next, I want us to think about saying things with an evil motive. All right, so we got to make sure to find out if the accusations are true. But let's say we do have the truth. We legitimately have the truth. That doesn't mean that we're right in spreading that information, right? Some people think that they can say anything about anyone as long as, hey, it's the truth, right? That's not the way that works. It's because there's always that question of motive. Why am I saying what? There's got to be a good reason for telling things about others. Sometimes people spread stories because they want to hurt people. That's all there is to it. They don't have proper motives. And in 1 Peter 2, verse 1, it says, "Therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking." Okay, evil speaking here is associated with malice. You notice that? That's an evil intent towards someone. And so what we're saying may be true, but we're saying it with the intent to harm. And malice can take on various forms, like jealousy. Here in verse 1, it talks about envy. We may speak evil of others because we're envious of their abilities or the blessings they have or the honor they receive, the favors they receive from others, that kind of stuff. We may seek to exalt someone, exalt ourselves above them, I should say, trying to make them look bad. Vengeance, anger, hatred, grudges, those are all other forms of malicious intent. Vengeance isn't just physical, right? And that may be what it is when you're a little kid and your brother hits you and you take vengeance by hitting him right back, but as you grow older, you get a little too old for that, and so you start using your words more, one of the most common ways to take vengeance is saying things to hurt others. It's easier too, right? So it just comes out, others harm us, or so we imagine, and so we say things to get even. Someone accuses us of something, we say, well, what about the time when you, those types of things. And sometimes we speak evil about others because we want to have things our way, selfish, pushy, whatever, When others oppose our views, whether it's in personal matters or doctrinal things, right, we might seek to discredit that person and in order to keep other people from paying attention to them. In 1 Timothy 6:4, it says the false teachers are often involved in that reviling. And so they hope to find fault. They say bad things about those who spoke the truth. And in 3 John, that we studied Wednesday night, verses 9 and 10, Diotrephes loved to have preeminence. And one of his methods was to speak evil against even the Apostle John. He'd speak evil about him. Speaking evil against others so we can get our way is a form of evil speaking. Yet it frequently happens in time of conflict. Now, sometimes we might speak with evil intent because we're being legitimately persecuted. That can happen. That's why Jesus tells us in Matthew 5, remember that we're blessed when people persecute us and say evil things about us for righteousness' sake. Focus on staying faithful. Make sure that we don't return their evil with evil. And so before we say anything about someone, even if it's true, we need to make sure that our motives are pure. Now, are we sincerely speaking for the good of the one that we're talking about or for the good of the others who have a genuine need for the information? We need to think about that. Now, moving on, some people just simply enjoy meddling in the personal affairs of others. That's just all there is to it. They get some kind of high off of it, right? Some kind of thrill. They get thrill from spreading bad news or any news for that matter. And sometimes it makes them feel important. Because they know some kind of intimate personal knowledge of somebody's affairs, those types of things that other people don't know about yet. 1 Timothy talks about that in 1 Timothy 5. It says, "And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things they ought not to." Here's speaking about widows who are young and full of energy yet. They're not really widows indeed. Wait till they get older to put them on the church's payroll and take care of them. If they're younger, have them get to work and get married, otherwise they're going to become busybodies. 2 Thessalonians 3:11 says that some refuse to work in that passage and were busybodies. Leviticus 19:16 says you should not go about as a talebearer, among your people. Some people simply don't, they have idle hands, right? Idle hands are what? The devil's playground? You know, and so having nothing constructive to do, and so they spread rumors about others or they gossip, and that's how they occupy their time. And if that's why we're sharing information, then we've got a problem. We've got a big problem. Another common problem is when we tell about the private sins of others instead of personally confronting them first, right? And that Matthew 18, I already mentioned that. If your brother sins against us, supposed to go tell him his fault, then that, keep it between the two of you. You know, and if they repent, if they hear us, we've gained our brother. The matter is closed. To spread personal information, the sins of that brother to others, right, instead of going to them first, can cause all kinds of problems. There's an untold amount of churches that have divisions in them because of that one problem. So-and-so did something against me, and so instead of handling my business, I went and told everybody else, right? You know, and so it can ruin a person's reputation. It drags other people into the controversy. Now, of course, when a brother has been confronted and he's refused to correct the wrong, you know, that's when you're supposed to get others involved, but only then. You know? And so the issue to be remembered is why are we saying what we're saying? You know, since telling the truth about others isn't necessarily sinful, and even telling something bad about other people, you know, motive has everything to do with whether we should be saying something or not. So now I want to transition a little bit here. Think about the effects of evil speaking. There's so many damage, so much damage that it causes, so many problems, and why should we avoid that kind of stuff? And the first one is that it alienates friends. It causes strife. It's a contention. I love these couple proverbs here, 16:28, a perverse man sows strife, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. Right? How many times have people become alienated from one another because of slander or gossip that other people have spread about them? It happens all the time, right? Proverbs 26:20, where there is no wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. You know, slander is often associated with strife, contention, divisions, and it's like fuel to a fire. You know, people may say harsh things about one another. You know, they may drag out all the dirt and discredit one another. They bring up old wrongs that were supposed to be corrected long ago. You know, do you know what so-and-so said about you? Well, remember the time they did such and such? You know, it just goes on and on. You know, others get upset, they respond by saying nasty things. I mean, soon you have a major conflict that's resulted, and it's all started by this evil speaking, you know. Also, slander can destroy a person. I want to go back a slide. Go back. There we go. Anyhow, verse 11, Proverbs 11, verse 9, it says, the hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor. You know, people have lost jobs, their wealth, their families, because of character assassination, you know. 18:21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Now, people have been killed. Lots of people have been killed just because of accusations, slanderous accusations that have been set against them. Jezebel had Naboth killed after she had two guys falsely accuse him, slander him, and they killed the guy, and they got his vineyard. You know? People get accused of sexual harassment, racism, all kinds of stuff, and when those things really occur, it's tragic. But in our cancel culture, when accusations are made, people often have such a knee-jerk emotional reaction, they forget that a person should be innocent until proven guilty. You know? Anyone who wants to hurt others, especially public figures, you know, just you can destroy their reputations, their jobs, their homes, just make the accusation, right? Despite the fact that you can't prove the accusation. So it causes all kinds of damage. There's that scene in 2 Samuel 10, where David sends some servants, I think it was 10 servants, to go comfort the king of Ammon when his father died. So they're like taking this little peace offering thing and saying, we're sorry about your dad dying, that kind of stuff. But the king's advisors slandered David, saying, these servants are spies. They didn't know that. An all-out war resulted because of totally untrue accusations, and a lot of people lost their lives in that war. How many congregations have been torn apart when people make untrue accusations? They spread malicious rumors or refuse to confront people personally. Tons of them. Next, I want to point out that when we slander people, we're showing we have the same character as Satan. This puts us in pretty bad company. The very word devil, that's translated devil, means slanderer. That's what it literally means. It means false accuser. In 1 Timothy 3, verse 11, it's talking about the wives of elders and deacons there. And it says they must not be slanderers. And if you read it in Greek, they must not be diablos. You know who diablos is? The devil. So they must not be the devil. Because that's what it literally means. The devil's job, that's one thing he does, is falsely accuse. He is a slanderer. He thinks the worst about everyone and everything. Now think about with Job, you know, when God presented Job, or his righteous man, none like him on the earth. And Job said, he'd turn against you if you suffered enough. And so he slandered Job. He slandered Job's good character. He didn't know whether Job would stick it out or not. But that illustrates the character of a slanderer, of a false accuser. And so when we're guilty of that kind of stuff, we're acting like the devil. You know, we've got the same character as him. And so because of that, it causes us who are guilty of these types of things to lose our eternal reward. In Psalm 101:5, it says, "Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy." God doesn't like this. In Romans 1, going through all those sins of the Gentile world, that kind of stuff, and it talks about backbiters are those who are worthy of death, and so are those people who endorse the practice of backbiting. In 1 Corinthians 5:11, revilers in the local church should be withdrawn from. Get them out of there. You know? And so there's all kinds of harm that comes from this. It's not something that you should take lightly. And so with that, let's transition again and think about how we can work to avoid evil speaking in our life. The first is don't get involved when other people do it. It's so easy to get sucked into that trap, right? And so not only are there people who just enjoy spreading the dirt about others, there are also people who enjoy listening to it. Don't give them an ear. Don't encourage or cooperate with an evil speaker. You know, they have to have someone to tell their slander to, you know, and by giving them a listening ear, we encourage their evil. Instead of listening, we should challenge their evidence. We should challenge their motives for the things that they're saying that we believe they shouldn't be saying. And if they can't properly defend their speech, we should rebuke them. You know? We can't get sucked into their ways. Here's a fascinating one, Proverbs 20:19. "He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, therefore do not associate with the one who flatters with his lips." A lot of talebearers are like this, right? A lot of slanders that people have nothing good to say about others. They also use flattery, okay? And they'll say nice things to lure us in. They'll say sweet things to people's faces, but they'll slander them behind their back, you know? And so we had a guy at the gravel pit that ran, well, he ran the concrete plant. You know, he's the main dispatch guy, took all the orders and that kind of stuff. And so he sat in this little office and everybody'd be coming and going. And while you're there, he's talking good to you and nice about you. The second you walk out the door, he starts talking trash about you. You can watch him do it with everybody else. No reason to assume he isn't doing it about you either. You know, but he would flatter. He'd be very flattering. Oh, you know, we're so much smarter and greater than everybody else here. And then you're an idiot as soon as you walk out the door. That type of stuff, right? So don't associate with people like that. It's no good. Also, the thing is, you could see that effect on everyone else in the concrete plant. That's why I got 1 Corinthians 15. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. And so it generated a culture of that, where people were just prone, all these grown men, right, 30 of them, would spend their time in little factions talking bad about each other, making accusations. It was just fascinating to watch. It was horrible at the same time. And so by avoiding them and exposing them, you know, we aren't going to be influenced to act like they do. And hopefully we can help them clean up their act. Another thing is we always have to carefully examine our motives, right? It always comes back to that. To correct our speech, we have to go back to the source, go back to our hearts. You know, same text we read last week when we were thinking about foul language here in Matthew 12:33. "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and the evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word man may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." So what the mouth speaks depends on the condition of the heart. That's what it all boils down to. And so in order to correct our speech, we have to correct our hearts. We need to think about this. We need to train ourselves, carefully examine our hearts, be sure of our motives. You know, we need to train ourselves to want to speak good things, you know, good for others. Ephesians 4:29, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." Our goal, as we, you know, use our words, the power of the tongue, should be to edify others, to impart grace. And that's to build others up, you know, and get them right according to God's word, not bite and devour and tear apart. You know, next, we've got to cultivate a desire to see others who sin to change their ways, right? Rather than spreading slanderous things or gossip about people who've sinned or allegedly sinned, we should hope for their repentance, you know, for their forgiveness. You know, if we're genuinely concerned about the conduct of others, then we aren't going to be just using that conduct as fodder to tell everyone about. Recently in Galatians 6:1, if a brother is overcome in a fault, we should seek to restore that person. We should sincerely want what is best for everyone, you know? And tied to that, we should pray for people. You know, instead of rejoicing when we hear people who have problems and spreading the evil news about them, that kind of stuff, we should pray for those people. In Luke 6, Jesus says even those who misuse us and mistreat us should still be responded to with love. Pray for them, seek God's blessing for them, pray that they'll receive what's truly good for them. Jesus himself, right? In Luke 23, Jesus prayed for the forgiveness of the people who killed him. He's our example, right, in all this. Think about this. It's not easy to pray for people and then turn around and slander them or join in with them and those types of things. Prayer's powerful. And so when we hear a report of people who've sinned or have other problems, an attitude of love and prayer is going to help us to be avoiding the idea of just speaking about it and talking about it with everybody around us. We have to work. We have to work diligently to maintain a proper attitude and proper speech. You know, here's the warning again. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. No man can tame the tongue, and out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. We've got a lot of work cut out for us when it comes to how we use our language and how we watch our tongue. And because of these warnings, we need to pray with David. Think about what David says here as we close. Psalm 141:3 says, "Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips." That's got to be a mantra of ours. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Let us stand and sing.